Welcome to the Inside Look at Legal podcast, a podcast by lawyers and experienced litigators, bringing you an inside look at today's legal practices. Hosted by Keith Miller, Butler, Schneider, and Pollack. Learn more about the firm at www.arkattorneys.com. And now, let's begin today's Inside Look at Legal.
Hi there. This is Inside Look at Legal. My name is Caroline Currier, and this is Christina Courtney with me.
Hello.
And we're talking about all things senior. Today, I really want to dive into second marriages among seniors, right? So individuals getting married over the age of 65 and what that looks like. The theme of this week's episode is keeping it separate. So we're really going to talk about when seniors get married, you know, the do's and don'ts, what they should do before diving into that. So I don't know about you, Christina, but I think there's nothing sweeter or more inspiring than, you know, two senior citizens falling in love again and getting married.
It's sweet.
Yeah. The problem is, it feels like a new start for most senior couples, but in reality, you're
somebody
bringing
somebody to spend the rest of their life with.
Right, right. Yep. And so even though a marriage can be a new start for seniors, you're bringing a lot of stuff into that marriage. So it's not really a fresh start, right? So you're bringing probably kids from a previous marriage, your entire estate, and you're also bringing, you know, your health problems, which is something that we don't really think about. There are several reasons why you should, and I hate to say this, but you should encourage your senior to consider not getting married and maybe just cohabitating with their partner. Some of those reasons being long-term care costs, you know, those are shared amongst spouses, you know, shared property, things like that. When you get married,
right,
things can change. I will address those reasons in greater detail and talk about that in another episode called The Blunders of Blended Families, that probably on next week. For now, we're going to talk about what you should do or what you should encourage your senior loved one to do when they insist on tying the knot. Right. So some protections that they can put into place to, you know, preserve their assets and protect their legacy, I guess. The first one being a prenuptial agreement. So a prenuptial agreement, a lot of you probably know what that is, right? It's all over the news. All the famous people have them, all the rappers and all that, but
celebrities,
all the celebrities, the movie stars. But really, your senior citizen needs a prenup before they get married. The reason being that they need to put those protections in place to preserve their separate property. So a prenup is for a senior citizen will say, you know, everything that I bring into this marriage, that's probably a home, maybe a vacation home, other real property, bank accounts, life insurance policies, retirement accounts, etc. All that is separate. That's, you know, going into the marriage, it's still mine after the marriage. Not that we really anticipate, you never really anticipate a divorce when you're going into a marriage, especially for someone 65 and older. You're like, they've definitely figured it out by now. But really, it's a protection because you just don't know what life holds. And we want to make sure that the seniors go in and they've established what they view as separate and what they view may or may not eventually be, you know, jointly owned marital property. So the second thing that your senior should do is get a new estate plan. So after they're married, your senior should have their existing plans reviewed by an attorney, probably an elder law attorney, just due to their age, right? It's important that your senior has a separate estate plan from their new spouse. Things get really hairy when I have two clients that have just gotten married and they come in my office and they say, we want a joint trust and we want to combine everything and put everything together and leave it to both of our children in equal shares. Well, more often than not, seniors are coming into this marriage with, you know, we talked about their property, their health problems, things like that. Well, they're also probably coming into this marriage with their children from, you know, from previous marriages. There can be a lot of friction, right? So not only are they coming in with their children and their children's opinions and personalities, but they're also coming in with their legacy,
right,
and their assets. So we want to make sure that those kids are protected. A lot of my clients' children are afraid to bring up this conversation with their parents because they say, well, I don't want to seem greedy. You know, right. I'm not just waiting around for my inheritance. But at the same time, this conversation is important because your seniors want to protect what they have. And chances are, so the majority of the time, clients won't come in my office getting married, you know, age 65 and be looking for a, you know, just a brand new estate plan. A lot of times they come in with an existing estate plan that they had with their former spouse who's either passed away or there is dissolution of the marriage. In that situation, you know, I look at these older trusts, you know, between my client and their former spouse. And most of the time it will say everything to our children in equal shares, or this much for our grandkids and this much for our children. And, you know, and that was the intent at the time, right? But things have changed, right? The senior is now
remarried,
yep. And they have this whole new side of the family, right? Stepkids. They have this new spouse who has, you know, other assets that may look similar or different to what my client has. And I have to educate my client on the realities of the situation, right? So are you wanting to combine your estate with your new spouse? And if they say yes, I'll explain, you know, what that looks like. That could be problematic for several reasons, but the most important being, once that's joint property, the surviving spouse of the two of them, so let's say I have my client, and then let's say my client is a female and they have just married a senior male, right? So let's say that husband outlives wife. Well, wife and husband have combined all their properties. We run into issues if they have a joint trust, let's say a joint revocable trust. Well, husband, you know, he's still alive, and we've opened up the door for him to maybe change that trust. If he can't change the trust, then we've opened the door for him to remove all of the assets from the trust and, you know, start over, create his new estate plan. So oftentimes people have worked together to combine their families. It's not always going to be perfect, but it's amicable. Well, after that first spouse passes away, things change. Maybe there's tension, maybe there's resentment, maybe there's a difference of opinions. Well, there's nothing really stopping husband from, you know, taking the money and running, right? Or changing those provisions of that trust to say, you know, I'm going to cross out, you know, my former wife's kids. I just want everything to go to my kids. Well, then wife's, you know, entire estate. Yeah, her legacy, right? So that, I mean, that's just not property that she owns. That's property that she gathered with her former spouse, right?
And she planned on passing down to her children.
Right. And her kids are out. So when I'm drafting a trust for someone that's 65 and older with a new spouse, we talk about the inability to change the trust, right? So I can draft in there to say, this trust is irrevocable upon the death of the first spouse, meaning the surviving spouse can't make changes to it. Even then, we call them trapdoors, right? That surviving spouse, like we talked about before, can remove all the property from that trust and start fresh if they want. So that's why I always try to stray away from doing a joint trust and combining assets with couples that new marriages with senior citizens. And the preference would be to keep things separate. So I encourage my clients, let's do an individual trust just for you, and we'll leave your property to your kids. That's kind of a tough conversation. It's almost like the same conversation of trying to encourage them not to get married in the first place.
Right.
These seniors come from a very conservative era, right? They want to live together. They want to get married. You know, what's mine is yours.
Right.
What's yours is mine. We share a home. I want my name on the deed because I want to take care of my spouse if something happens to me. And that's all good and well to hold property in a trust for the benefit of your spouse. You know, if you pass away first, totally understand people wanting to take care of their surviving spouse. And we can do that without, you know, handing everything over to the surviving spouse for them to do with what they please. In our office, we call that the honor system, or, you know, and the honor system works, but.
So you do have a way of protecting those assets.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it, to a certain degree, depending on what the client wants. And there is a lot of opportunity to really personalize these plans and protect things. So for instance, we just talked about holding things in trust for the benefit of the surviving spouse. I'll give you an idea of what that looks like, but basically the trust would say, you know, upon Betty's death, hold all of her property in trust for the benefit of George. And, you know, so that makes George the lifetime beneficiary, meaning that the property is still owned by the trust. So Betty's trust still owns the home that George lives in, let's say, or bank accounts, things like that. But they're being held for George's benefit. So we might say all the income that's generated by this trust distributed out to George for his lifetime. So George is living in the house. Any kind of investment accounts that are generating income, all that's going to George during his lifetime. But after George passes away, then everything's going to the kids, right, where Betty had intended it to go, her okay. children. So does that help
yes.
kind of paint a
yeah.
good picture? So that's just one avenue, right? But there are several different ways to do this. It's just important to really specify what is separate and what is marital property and what the intent is. Unfortunately, you know, at the end of the day, I have to do what my client asks me to do. So I do have to draft plans that, you know, we put everything together and we distribute it out. And one of my clients might have 9 kids and the other one might have 1. But they want to combine everything properly, and I mean properly in a moral sense, right? They're husband and wife.
Right.
They want to combine all their assets.
Equally.
Right. And then divide it amongst their 10 kids equally. Well, if you're the only child in that scenario, it's probably a little upsetting.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we talked about fears or hesitations on bringing up these conversations with parents because you're afraid to sound greedy or overbearing. But truthfully, all you need to do is just encourage your parents to meet with an attorney. I always tell my clients' kids, if they call and they want to set up an appointment for their parent, I'll say, just let me be the bad guy. I can deliver the bad news or, you know, give them my opinion.
Give them the options.
Right. And that's a huge part of my job, is just educating people and letting them know what their options are. And then from there, they're making an informed choice on what they would like. But a lot of times clients just don't know. And they say, well, I can put everything together and then still leave it to my
yeah.
you know, kids. But these are tough conversations to have because you don't want to sit down with a newlywed couple and explain that, look, Betty, if you go first, George can turn around and write your kids out of this trust, or turn around and take everything out of the trust and sell it and leave all the money to his kids. So these conversations are difficult, but they're really necessary for your parents to understand what's going on and to protect your parents' assets. I've seen clients of all scales on assets, right? I've seen millionaires getting married to people with, you know, less than $50,000 in the bank. So these are important conversations to have.
And it also keeps tension from the kids, in between the kids later, when all this is having to be decided, if you have this all set in place now.
It does, yeah. And I selfishly would say that it makes my job a lot easier on the back end if they make the right choices, because I don't have a bunch of kids mad at me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good way. I mean, going in, having everything in order, removes a lot of the tension from the situation.
I did want to say, I read that cohabitating at age 50 and older has risen 75% since 2007.
Okay.
And that's faster than any other age group.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So that's something that needs to be addressed. This is a good topic to discuss if it's that high.
Yeah. It sounds like people are listening and paying attention if that's the case. A lot of times people will just say, oh, well, my mom and my dad, let's say a woman's widowed. We're still talking about Betty, I guess. And Betty was widowed, but her and her former husband had a trust together. A lot of kids will just say, well, mom has that trust and everything's probably protected under that. We don't need to worry about it. But in reality, Betty isn't in charge. So Betty can do whatever Betty wants with all that property. So that's why it's important not to make assumptions on what's in that estate plan and actually maybe review it with your parents, what could happen and what your parents' wishes are, and kind of incorporate those into their new plan.
And it doesn't hurt just to discuss it with an elder law attorney just to make sure.
Right.
They can review it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I review trust very often, especially people entering a new phase of life. I draft a lot of individual trust and things like that. But it is important because an elder law attorney, beyond just a basic estate planning attorney, we can kind of look at it from a long-term care perspective. If somebody's closer to the end of their life than they are to the beginning of their life, I'm more inclined to go over the details and make sure that my clients not only understand what the document says and what the examples, you know, that where the rules in that document can play out, but also all the what ifs.
Yeah.
Right? What if, you know, you guys are married and happy and healthy now, but what happens down the road? Who's going to pay the other's medical expenses? And that's actually what we'll talk about on next week's episode, the blunder of blending families.
Okay.
But I think that's all I have for you guys. If y'all have any questions, you can always contact us at our office. The contact information is available on our website. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to Inside Look at Legal with your hosts, Keith, Miller, Butler, Schneider, and Pollack. Learn more at www.arkattorneys.com.